I wanted to talk a little bit about the update which you have received, number 727, and make some comments as we go through it. The editorial was written by Mr. Eric Rank, titled "When Busy is Lazy." And he makes the point that by crowding a schedule with activities and taking on unnecessary responsibilities, we might be putting off the most important use of our time. Later on in the editorial, he says that we have no shortage of distractions to keep us busy today. The world has very much to offer in the way of being busy with new important things that could turn our attention away from spiritual development. And yes, I mean, I wrote him kiddingly, and I said, well, you know, I'm only glad that I'm working in quote-unquote spiritual issues, you know, when I'm working on putting an update together and that kind of thing. Because, boy, I mean, I don't know how in the world I could handle it otherwise, you know, because there's so many responsibilities, and frankly, it's going to be more and more and more. And as even in the prayer request and updates I mentioned and alluded to, persecution will become more stringent. And we shouldn't be kidding ourselves about that. When it comes to current events, to give you the summary first, we begin with reports about the UK and the ongoing battle pertaining to a Brexit. And of course, you all know that the referendum is going to be in June, and they will decide whether or not England is going to be part of the EU from then on or not. And some articles have pointed out that it appears, and it's appearing, I mean, we don't know for sure, that more and more of the British people are voting for getting out of the EU. Now, ultimately, we know that's going to happen, but we don't know, of course, exactly as to when. We also speak about the election in Iran and the hope that things might change, but reality is it doesn't appear to be that it's changing at all. We also talk about a looming catastrophe for Iraq. Now, that's something I had not even heard about before, but it looks like, and I will talk about this in a moment, it looks like a very real threat for millions of people over there. We talk about the migrant crisis in Germany and Europe, which is not getting any better. Now, we hear a lot about elections in this country, but they do have elections in Germany on Sunday, tomorrow, in three states. These are not federal elections, these are not nationwide elections, these are state elections, but it's three elections. And if Angela Merkel doesn't do good in all three of them, then her future in Germany might be at stake. According to the polls, and I know, hearing a lot about polls these days, she's not doing good at all. So we'll see how that all develops. And again, we'll inform you about it once we know more. Pope Francis is again in hot water. You probably heard about his controversial praise for an Italian politician who was responsible for 10,000 abortions. But in the meantime, he made some more controversial statements. We'll report that in the next update. And then when we turn to the United States, we speak about the political maneuvering in Colorado regarding unvaccinated children. We, of course, have a lot to say about Mr. Donald Trump and his future role in the United States and the world. We refer to two Standing Watch programs we have done, one already in August of 2015, titled "The Trump Phenomenon, How to Explain It," and another one recently titled "Trump Shocks Europe." And in the meantime, the American press is waking up to that fact as well. The New York Times now wrote an article almost using the same language about Trump shocking Europe. I wonder whether they saw our Standing Watch program. I doubt it. But in any event, now they all realize that Trump is, it looks like, becoming influential. And nobody likes it over there. I'll talk about that in a moment. And then finally, we have some articles about Apple's fight with the FBI and the danger of smartphones, about which I will also talk about in a moment. Going to the article by Express, dated February 29, it tells us that most of England wants to see an end to EU supremacy over the UK. according to a landmark survey ahead of the upcoming in-out referendum on June 23. Another interesting thing is that, as you all know, Switzerland is not part of the EU, but Switzerland apparently asked for becoming a part of the EU, or actually going back to the time when the EU was the EEC. So that is still pending. What was it, 24 years ago, they filed that application. Now, in a symbolical move, they withdrew it and said, okay, we are not going to be part of the EU. And, of course, as you know, even during World War II, Switzerland was always kind of independent, even though they really collaborated with a lot of countries. That's what they're doing now. It says that they have about 120 agreements with all kinds of EU member states. Norway and Iceland, the article points out, they are members of the European Economic Area with full access to the single market, but they're not part of the EU. And we don't expect Norway to ever become part of the EU. But so they're happy with that. Oh, well, we are out of the EU, but we are going to have relationships with the EU. And, of course, those who want to leave the EU in Britain argue the same way. Or we can just leave the EU and still have good relationships with the EU. But, of course, we know from prophecy that's not what's going to happen. The catastrophe in Iraq. Now, that's something I didn't even know about. But there's apparently a dam which is near to collapsing. And according to the reports, it's a foregone conclusion it will collapse. And when that happens, approximately 500,000 to 1.47 million people will be affected. And if they cannot vacate in time, they will all die. And they're talking about the fact that there will be a 45 feet of water within hours of the dam breach will cover the entire area. Now, when it comes to the situation in Germany and in Europe, as I said, there's a lot we have in this update. I don't want to necessarily go into it, except for the fact that Angela Merkel, who of course is becoming now extremely political, she knows her survival is at stake, she's now suddenly talking about the fact that Germany should play a bigger role in world affairs. Now, the Germans don't like that too much. They said, well, you know, we have problems enough on our own. Why do we have to get involved in world affairs? Sounds a little bit like what we're hearing in this country. But she understands that ultimately that's what Germany is going to do, and she is at this point advocating it already. Now, since we're talking about this country and talking about the ongoing debates and situations with who is going to be the next presidential candidate for the Republicans and for the Democrats, I felt extremely interesting the fact that the presidential candidate, Donald Trump, in some of his speeches, made two very drastic announcements. The one is he wants to remove the federal restrictions against tax-exempt organizations. Now, you all know that as a church, under a 501c3 statute, the church cannot get involved in politics. In other words, if they do in any way, they will lose their tax-exempt status. Of course, that means that no religious figure can actually endorse any political candidate, and so Trump wants to change that. And he might very well be able to. Because the current law, it's not like it always existed. It came into effect under President Johnson in 1987. Prior to that, you didn't have that. So it can be, if he gets the necessary support, it can get easily revoked. The other one is perhaps even more interesting. And that is that he said that he wants to change America's libel laws to make it easier to sue the media and media companies. You know, if you are a public figure, which of course Mr. Trump is, and virtually all the politicians are, you have to show malice if you make a statement against somebody. And if you cannot prove malice, then they can say whatever they want to say. And so he wants to change that. And he wants to say, no, if they make any false statements, then they should be held liable. Which, personally, I don't think is such a bad idea. Because then, obviously, you know, people would be a little bit more careful as to what they say and write about others. This article is interesting. This was actually written before the most recent elections of Super Tuesday. And this article here, under 97% certainty that Trump will be the next president. This is a scientific research, a scientific forecast, according to which Donald Trump has a minimum 97% chance of winning the general election as a Republican nominee, and a 97% chance of defeating Hillary Clinton, and a 99% chance of defeating Bernie Sanders, if that would be the one, according to Professor Norpaus. Now, how reliable is that stuff? It's interesting that since 1912, he was always right, except for one exception. One exception was actually, it says here, in 1960. I don't know what the 1960 election was. In other words, he was wrong on that. Apart from that, and he looks at all the different polls and movements and so on, he has always been right. And so, again, as I told you before, I'm not going to say this dogmatically here from the pulpit, but I've had the feeling for a long time that Donald Trump's going to be the next American president. And when I saw that article, I said, well, that's rather interesting. And that was even before Super Tuesday. That was even before he won big, and I personally feel that he's going to win big again when it comes to March 15. But the Republicans are trying to stop him, as you all heard. You know, Mr. Romney gave a speech which told everybody, don't vote for Trump. And if anything, the speech did nothing to harm him, but possibly did a lot to help him. In Europe, they're very concerned. The New York Times, as I mentioned earlier, wrote this article about Europe is in shock. The reaction now is becoming one of outrage and panic. They point out that Der Spiegel magazine had recently an article showing Mr. Trump with the American flag behind him engulfed in flames. And then the article read, Madness, America's Agitator. Even Bild Online, which is pretty much like, a tabloid over here, a National Enquirer or something like that, but very influential, they ran an article by Franz Josef Wagner, who is actually the former editor of the newspaper, and he wrote, what kind of world we will live in if these people, including Trump, come to power? Good question. But then here's one, which I thought was very interesting, by Deutsche Welle. 74% of Germans would vote for Hillary Clinton. Only 8% would support Donald Trump. I don't know what that tells you, but it tells you, obviously, that the Germans are extremely nervous about Donald Trump. I was just talking to somebody before services started, and I begin to wonder, too, even apart from the fact that most of what he proposes I never agreed with and could agree with, but you begin to wonder how serious is he actually. I mean, he gave this big speech during the debate talking about we should bring waterboarding back and we should have other methods to fight the terrorists. And shortly thereafter, he totally backpedals and detracts and says, well, I would never actually do anything which would be against the law, including waterboarding. So again, what are you going to believe? But the thing is, it doesn't seem to matter to the people who vote for him. I mean, whatever he says, it doesn't seem to matter. Which tells me there is more involved here than just people going out voting. As we know, it is ultimately God who puts people on a particular or in a particular office for his purpose. And as I said before, we know that ultimately America will go completely, totally down. And we know that Europe will fight against America in war, and America will lose. We know that that is clearly prophesied. And we don't know exactly how this is all going to come about, but what we are seeing right now might very well have something to do with it. Now, when it comes to Apple, I thought this was interesting too, because there is this fight going on, as you know, between Apple and the FBI. And we have actually also posted a standing watch program, Why Would Apple Resist the FBI? We also did a German version on that, and some people understand, and some people say, no, I don't understand, why would they do it? Because the FBI said, it's only this particular case. We only want access to this iPhone in this particular case pertaining to the terrorist in San Bernardino. That is patently untrue. There are numerous lawsuits pending right now against the FBI, and in this article by The Guardian, dated February 29, we report about another lawsuit where the FBI is asking exactly for the same thing, but it has nothing to do with the case in San Bernardino. And in that particular case, the magistrate denied the FBI's request. And that's what he said. The New York magistrate echoed at least one of the key arguments Apple is making in its other higher profile fight with the government, having to do with the All Writs Act. And he said that cannot be used. This is a law which was enacted in 1789. And he said that can't be used to order a technology company to manipulate its products. The implications of the government's position are so far-reaching, both in terms of what it would allow today and what it implies about congressional intent in 1789, as to produce intermissibly absurd results. And the judge is absolutely 100% correct. But it shows how the whole thing is misrepresented, because it's not only about the case in San Bernardino at all. Not at all. But I wanted to bring your attention to those of you who like your iPhones, who like to use those smartphones, right? And this is an article here by Bloomberg. It says, your phone knows more about you than you think. You can extract enough information on a typical person's phone that you can construct a virtual clone of that individual. Our smartphones are loaded with our intimate conversations, our financial data, our health records. They're also loaded with the location of our kids in many cases. The world's 7.3 billion people now have an estimated 3.4 billion smartphones. That's expected to climb to 6.4 billion by 2021. The phones are powerful, processing more information faster than the computers NASA used to put humans on the moon. There's a record of calls made and received, text messages, photos, contact lists, calendar entries, internet browsing history and notes, as well as access to email accounts, banking institutions, websites like Amazon, Facebook, Twitter, Netflix. Many people instruct their phones to remember passwords for these apps so they can be quickly opened, which means they are available to anyone who gets into the phone. Moreover, smartphones quietly collect data about a user and share it with others. Most users don't realize the extent to which their phone is connected to the outside world because accounts stay automatically logged in. So again, think twice, three times, 10 times, whatever, before you use your iPhone for whatever you want to use it for. Thanks to Mr. Kalen, by the way, Kalen Mitchell, who actually sent that article to me. Very interesting, very interesting. So maybe somebody may be lying in bed with his wife. It may not be his wife, maybe the clone. Well, I'm kidding, you know, but you see what I'm talking about. See, I mean, this is how bad it can get, right? Q&A. Should an unbaptized person participate in foot washing is the question. Well, in the last Q&A, Mr. Gale talked about foot washing in general and the fact that foot washing is still absolutely mandated for true Christians today who participate in the Passover. But this Q&A goes into the question, but should people who are not yet baptized participate in the Passover service, including the foot washing? Now, we point out in our free booklet on the spring holidays that we had already addressed the issue regarding partaking of the bread and the wine. And we made that point very clear that, you know, they shouldn't participate in taking bread and wine if they're not baptized yet, but we hadn't quite totally clearly addressed the issue of foot washing. Now, somebody said to me, well, you know, but that was always clear to me. It never even hurts the idea that somebody could participate in foot washing if the person isn't baptized yet, let's say including children. Well, I'll tell you in a moment, that is unfortunately not what in certain areas is being practiced. But in this Q&A, we talked about the fact that Judas left following the traditional Passover meal and the foot washing, but before the institution of the symbols of the bread and the wine. I mean, that's clear. See, Judas participated in the foot washing, but he left before Christ introduced the symbols of bread and wine, so he didn't participate in those. And so we say here in the Q&A, the question arises naturally as to whether a person who is not yet baptized should or could nevertheless participate in the foot washing ceremony, given the fact that Judas did so before leaving. And then we discuss this some more, and we say that when focusing on prospective members today who have not yet been baptized, it is the judgment of the Church of the Eternal God and its international affiliates that these individuals ought not participate in the foot washing. It's also been the judgment of the Church of God that, barring extraordinary circumstances, which will be evaluated by the local pastor, unbaptized visitors, including children, should not be present during the observance. But we also said that those who are prospective members, they should contemplate at home during the time of the Passover service on the meaning of the same, probably reading literature about the Passover or listening to a related sermon, while spiritually preparing for and anticipating the time when he or she will be baptized and able to participate actively in the service. Now, in preparation of this Q&A, I talked to the older, and I mean this respectfully, older ministers in the church, and I was told, quite to my surprise, that apparently at one time, unbaptized prospective members, or children even, were allowed to participate in the foot washing. Now, as long as I've been in the church, I have never seen that. But here is another interesting article which we received from a minister in another church who apparently got our Q&A, and he said this: if I remember correctly, the Worldwide Church of God taught that foot washing would be allowed for unbaptized children who came to the service. I remember our pastor saying that 30 to 40 years ago. So, of course, your change is certainly okay, but am I not correct in asserting that WCG allowed it? I have followed that in our own church and have allowed anyone to participate in the foot washing. Anyone. Well, I can dogmatically say the Worldwide Church of God never taught that. However, I can see certain areas, even in Worldwide Church of God days, which would, depending on what minister they might have had, which would have allowed that. I heard of one minister who is now in a different church organization, not this one here, that's still a different one, and it doesn't surprise me, just knowing a little bit about the individuals involved. So the point is this, and if you have questions, please read carefully the Q&A explaining as to why it would not be good, it wouldn't be accurate, wouldn't be biblical, wouldn't be godly to allow non-baptized members to participate in any of the three aspects of the service, whether it's foot washing, whether it is the bread, or whether it is the wine. I also like to mention, since we are approaching the Passover season, that Judas was allowed to be there and that Christ washed Judas' feet. Now, I know that Mr. Gale, when he's going to be here, will have a sermon on foot washing. I hopefully don't preempt him a little bit with what I'm going to say now. But we should reflect on that. I mean, Christ knew that Judas would betray him. He knew that, humanly speaking, Judas would be responsible for Christ's death. I mean, if you put it all together, at least partially. Knowing this, he still washed Judas' feet. It tells us a lot about the attitude Christ had. And that's the kind of attitude we have to have. Would you have washed Judas' feet? If you had known that within a few hours he would bring all the Roman soldiers to the garden to arrest you, and then, of course, you would be tortured, terribly tortured, and then finally killed. I mean, sometimes we have these tiny, little, unimportant, insignificant, quote-unquote, problems with others, right? Are we having the attitude Christ had? Where he was willing to wash Judas' feet, who was about to be responsible for his murder? We should ask ourselves that question, because, you know, we are supposed to forgive each other from the heart. We can't have any grudges, can't carry around any grudges. Otherwise, we are in grave danger when we take the Passover. So let's make sure we get everything cleared up, and many times just forget about little tiny insignificant things. Why even carry them around? They don't do any good, and they don't others any good either. The Forum, written by Phyllis Burke, Imagine No Hunger. And amongst other things, she points out, and I might add something, but she saw a truck, and on this truck there was this nice little painted text, Imagine No Hunger. And of course, then she thought about it, and she says, it has been my observation that there are too many variables and too many obstacles that prevent men from growing and distributing healthy food for everyone. Obstacles such as dictatorial governments, wars, huge corporate farming and distribution practices, and the use of chemicals in the growing fields as well as in the animals we eat. In other words, man's ineffectiveness is ensuring no one goes hungry can be traced back to man not living by God's instructions for right living. And that is so very true. In addition, of course, you just know that when you give, you know, donations to some organizations, if at all, a small fraction of that money might reach the people who need it, if at all. And as I said so many times before, when it comes to the church of God, we have a responsibility today to preach the gospel in all the world as a witness to all nations. We don't have a responsibility today to try to make this world a better place and to have all kinds of missionary work going on in all kinds of different parts of the world. That's not our commission. And that's not really helping any, because it's just a drop in the ocean. The sooner we can get our commission done, the sooner Christ can return. Because Christ is not going to return until the point where God says, okay, now the gospel has been preached in all the world as a witness. Then, and only then, Christ will return. So the point is, we can, in the church even, we can delay or we can accelerate the return of Christ. We are not accelerating it by doing all kinds of quote-unquote missionary work in some parts of the world, which is just a drop in the ocean. Anyway, doesn't do anything substantially to change things.